So if you want to turn with me to 2 Samuel chapter 19, and I know it seems like there's often a gap between our 2 Samuel messages for various reasons, but it's been almost a month since we looked at this. But we did start, we started to look at the last part of 2 Samuel 19, most of chapter 19, last time. And I would like to, Lord willing, finish chapter 19 tonight. Best case scenario, I would like to do chapter 20 next week, and then in the fall, we'll hopefully finish up 2 Samuel. But let me read chapter 19, and we'll read verses 9 through 43. We covered 9 through 15 last time, and so we'll cover the rest of it, Lord willing, tonight. But let me again just emphasize as we're reading it, just to remind you of the context. This is immediately following the defeat of Absalom. Absalom, David's son, rebelled against David and all the tribes of Israel, especially Judah, because Absalom was from the tribe of Judah, as was Ahithophel, and was as was Amasa, the commander of the army. They were all from Judah. And all of Israel got behind Absalom in this rebellion against David. And as you know, Absalom was... chased David out of Jerusalem across the Jordan, and David went to the town of Mahanaim. And after the battle, they all came back to Mahanaim, this walled city on the east side of the Jordan. And that's where David is at this point, kind of waiting. The question is, now what? You know, Absalom is dead. Ahithophel is dead. The rebellion is over, and the Israelites go back to their tents, and the question, okay, now what? And that's kind of where we're at here as we read, and I'll actually start in verse 8, because the last sentence of verse 8 is really where we begin. So the king arose, sat in the gate, when they told all the people, saying, behold, the king is sitting in the gate. And that's again at Mahanaim, the city where they were. Then all the people came before the king. Now Israel had fled, each to his tent. All the people were quarreling throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, the king delivered us from the hand of our enemies and saved us from the hand of the Philistines. But now he has fled out of the land from Absalom. However, Absalom, whom we anointed over us, has died in battle. Now then, why are you silent about bringing the king back? Then King David sent to Zadok and Abiathar the priest, saying, speak to the elders of Judah, saying, why are you the last to bring the king back to his house, since the word of all Israel has come to the king, even to his house? You are my brothers, you are my bone and my flesh. Why then should you be the last to bring back the king? Say to Amasa, are you not my bone and my flesh? May God do so to me and more also, if you will not be commander of the army before me continually in place of Joab. Thus he turned the hearts of all the men of Judah as one man, so that they sent word to the king, saying, return, you and all your servants. The king then returned and came as far as the Jordan, and Judah came to Gilgal in order to go to meet the king, to bring the king across the Jordan. Then Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjamite, who was from Bahurim, hurried and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. There were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, with Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, and his 15 sons and his 20 servants with him. And they rushed to the Jordan before the king. Then they kept crossing the ford to bring over the king's household and to do what was good in his sight. And Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was about to cross the Jordan. So he said to the king, let not my lord consider me guilty, nor remember what your servant did wrong in the day when my lord the king came out from Jerusalem, so that the king would take it to heart. For your servant knows that I have sinned. Therefore, behold, I have come today, the first of all the house of Joseph, to go down to meet my lord the king. But Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said, should not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed? David then said, what have I to do with you, O sons of Zeruiah, that you should this day be an adversary to me? Should any man be put to death in Israel today? For do I not know that I am king over Israel today? The king said to Shimei, you shall not die. Thus the king swore to him. Then Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king. He had neither cared for his feet, nor trimmed his mustache, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he came home in peace. And it was when he came from Jerusalem to meet the king that the king said to him, "Why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth?" So he answered, "Oh, my lord the king, my servant deceived me. For your servant said, 'I will saddle a donkey for myself that I may ride on it and go with the king,' because your servant is lame. Moreover, he has slandered your servant to my lord the king, but my lord the king is like the angel of God. Therefore, do what is good in your sight. For all my father's household was nothing but dead men before my lord the king. Yet you set your servant among those who ate at your own table. What right do I have yet that I should complain any more to the king?" So the king said to him, "Why do you still speak of your affairs? I have decided. You and Ziba shall divide the land." Mephibosheth said to the king, "Let him even take it all, since my lord the king has come safely to his own house." Now Barzillai the Gileadite had come down from Ogalim and went on to the Jordan with the king to escort him over the Jordan. Now Barzillai was very old, being 80 years old, and he had sustained the king while he stayed at Mahanaim, for he was a very great man. The king said to Barzillai, "You cross over with me, and I will sustain you in Jerusalem with me." But Barzillai said to the king, "How long have I yet to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am now 80 years old. Can I distinguish between good and bad? Or can your servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Or can I hear any more the voice of singing men and women? Why then should your servant be an added burden to my lord the king? Your servant would merely cross over the Jordan with the king. Why should the king compensate me with this reward? Please let your servant return, that I may die in my own city near the grave of my father and my mother. However, here is your servant Chimham. Let him cross over with my lord the king, and do for him what is good in your sight." The king answered, "Chimham shall cross over with me, and I will die for him, or I will do for him what is good in your sight, and whatever you require of me, I will do for you." All the people crossed over the Jordan, and the king crossed too. The king then kissed Barzillai and blessed him, and he returned to his place. Now the king went on to Gilgal, and Chimham went on with him. And all the people of Judah, and also half the people of Israel, accompanied the king. And behold, all the men of Israel came to the king and said to the king, "Why had our brothers, the men of Judah, stolen you away and brought the king and his household and all David's men with him over the Jordan?" Then all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, "Because the king is a close relative to us. Why then are you angry about this matter? Have we eaten at all at the king's expense, or has anything been taken for us?" But the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, "We have 10 parts in the king. Therefore we also have more claim on David than you. Why then did you treat us with contempt? Was it not our advice first to bring back our king?" Yet the words of the men of Judah were harsher than the words of the men of Israel. Well, let me just take a few minutes and rehearse what we covered the last time, just to, for sake of context a little. And again, being that it's a month since we looked at this passage, the first thing that we observed in verses 8 to 10 is the response of Israel, less Judah, to David after their defeat. Now, I do want to observe again that you have this, crops up repeatedly, really all the way back to the time of the judges, this division between Judah and the rest of the tribes of Israel. And it's going to come up again in this passage as we read. But I observe here that this is all the other tribes. It's not Judah. It's all the other tribes. They're discussing among themselves in verses 8 to 10 here, what are we going to do? They were in a position where, you know, their king, you know, Absalom is dead. And when you get down to verse 10, it says, however, Absalom, whom we anointed over us, had died in battle. Now then, why are you silent about bringing the king back? That question seems to be addressed among themselves. Like they're asking each other, why don't we bring the king back? You know what? And so, although it's not clear from this section, it's clear after this in a couple places that they did invite David to come back and be their king. And again, they seem to be total pragmatists. I mean, there's nothing else. They have nothing else to do. They bring David back, not out of apparently love for David, which is pretty obvious. They rebel against him right away. but it seems to be that's all that's like it's the, all they have. You know, this is like the only candidate. And so they end up giving an invitation to David. But David seems to ignore the invitation. It doesn't seem like he responds to it. He actually is most concerned with his own tribe, which is Judah. And I think that that partly is because they are the one that rebelled. It was his son, it was Ahithophel, it was Amasa. They were all from the tribe of Judah. And, you know, the rebellion began in Hebron, which is his home area, Judah. And so in verses 11 through 15, you have responses. You have the response of David, not to this invitation from Israel as the tribes, but a response to the tribe of Judah. Judah does not reach out to David. David reaches out to Judah. Again, we saw this, but if you look in verse 11, then King David sent to Zadok and Abiathar the priest, saying, speak to the elders of Judah, saying, why are you the last to bring the king back to his house, since the word of all Israel has come to the king, even to his house? You are my brothers. You are my bone and my flesh. Why then should you be the last to bring back the king? And the most amazing thing he says in verse 13, he says to Amasa, who is his nephew, like Joab is also a nephew. He says, so to Amasa, are you not my bone and my flesh? May God do so to me and more also, if you will be the commander of the army before me, continuing in place of Joab. This was truly the ultimate means of reconciliation. He actually offered to the command of the rebel army to be the commander in place of Joab. And Joab had rebelled against David several times, and most of all, especially in killing Absalom. But at any rate, I mean, again, as I said last time, this is a little bit like if the president would have said to Robert E. Lee, I'm going to make you the head of the army in place of General Grant. I mean, you know, why would you do that? I mean, it actually seems kind of, in my mind, a little strange that David did this, but it was his way of bending over backwards to reconcile himself to his own tribe. And it really did work. I think it was sincere. I don't think this is merely politics. But David, if I can put it this way, he kind of died to himself. This was not about revenge. It was about bringing unity to his people and bringing unity to the nation. And he did this. And it says in verse 14, thus he turned the hearts of all the men of Judah as one man, so that they sent the word to the king saying, return. And so now his own tribe not only offered him, he said, to return, but they actually says then they went out to meet him and actually help him across the river. And so David here shows an amazing humility and amazing wisdom in turning his own tribe back to himself, the tribe that rebelled against him the most. But then that leads to the rest of the chapter, which is really David's response fundamentally to three individuals. And as he's returning, as he's actually getting ready to cross the river, and then he crosses the river and heading up towards Jerusalem, stops at Gilgal and so forth. Again, three people that he meets. And this is kind of, in some ways, it's not exactly, but kind of a reversal of when he left. And when he left Jerusalem and he was going up the Mount of Olives and fleeing, he met several people. This is back in chapter 15 and 16. He met several people and had interviews with them. And now, on his way back, he has interviews with three more people. And some of them relate to what happened in that time, some of them don't, but at any rate, these three individuals demonstrate, or I should say David in his response to these three individuals, demonstrates several things about himself and shows a great deal of wisdom and humility. But the first two, and I want to look at them all and tonight, but the first two I kind of did look at because we met them before. And but I will rehearse them briefly. I don't want to cover all the ground. But these three individuals are Shimei, Mephibosheth, and Barzillai. And you will, again, I would just say in a kind of a summary way, in the first case with Shimei, this is a response of mercy. It's a response of mercy to a man who cursed him and, quite frankly, should have died. In the second case with Mephibosheth, I would say it's fundamentally a response of wisdom. This is a man who seemingly betrayed him, who probably didn't, but whom David had no way of knowing for certain what happened. It was kind of a he said, she said. But he shows great wisdom. And then in the case of Barzillai, it is a response of thankfulness. And he shows gratitude towards one who helped him tremendously in a time of need. And so we just want to consider those three. And then whatever time I have left, if I have time left, I will look at those last four verses, verses 40 to 43. But if I don't, they fit in, they kind of usher us into chapter 20. So it could, those verses could go with chapter 20 or chapter 19. So we'll see where we're at. But let me just first of all, again, look at Shimei. This is the response of mercy, the man who cursed him. And the context of this really is back in chapter 16. I'm not going to go back and read it because we already did that. We looked at that a few weeks ago or however long ago it was. And you remember when he was leaving, Shimei was from the tribe of Benjamin. And as David is being chased out of town by his son, Shimei comes out and curses him and starts cursing him, throwing stones at him from afar, of course, but throwing stones at him. And you remember, what's his name? Can't say his name. Said, hey, kill him. You know, why don't you just put him to death? And David says, hey, if the Lord has called him to curse, let him curse. And he shows him mercy. He doesn't put him to death. And so when David returns, the very first one to meet him, he goes so far as to cross the river himself before David crosses the river. He's anxious to go talk to David, is Shimei. Shimei is the very first one to go. He says in verse 16, then Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjamite, who was from Bahurim, hurried, he was in a hurry, came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. There were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, with Ziba the servant of the house of Saul and his 15 sons and his 20 servants with him. And they rushed to the Jordan before the king. Then they kept crossing the ford to bring over the king's household and to do what was good in his sight. Let me just stop, and this is kind of a footnote, but I'm going to say more about this, Lord willing, in a little bit. But again, I'm kind of fascinated by the whole tribal thing here. When you go to, I find it interesting here that all these men of Benjamin come down with the tribe of Judah to meet David. It's interesting because when you go to 1 Kings 12 and, you know, the rebellion after Solomon's death, and they rebel against Solomon's son Rehoboam, and all of Israel follows Jeroboam, who, basically led the 10 tribes away and they started the northern kingdom, right? And Rehoboam ruled over Judah. But the one tribe that went with Judah, although we call it Judah, the other tribe that was with Judah was Benjamin. You see that in 1 Kings 12. So Judah and Benjamin are often listed together. And I kind of find it interesting why those two are together. They're not brothers. I mean, they were half-brothers, if you will. But, I mean, they were. Nothing seems to put them together other than their land was next to each other. But I'm kind of thinking that maybe part of the reason that Judah and Benjamin were together is because of the amazing kindness that David showed to the house of Saul. Not just at his first ascension or whatever, when he became king, and he showed mercy to the house of Saul. He respected the house of Saul. He showed mercy to Mephibosheth. He showed mercy here to Shimei, who was a son of Saul. He showed mercy later on when that lady protected the carcasses of the sons of Saul that were killed. He always showed respect to the house of Saul and to the tribe of Benjamin. And I can't help but think that maybe that's part of the reason that Benjamin, from that time on, always seems to side with Judah. I just think it's interesting that they come down here. There are lots of sons of Benjamin with Judah. Shimei comes, and he, again, comes over to the king. It says he fell down before the king. We see his humility. We see he's in a hurry to come. He falls down before the king before he is crossing the Jordan. So he said to the king, "Let not my lord consider me guilty." This is an impressive confession, if it was sincere, right? "Let not my lord consider me guilty, nor remember what your servant did wrong in the day when my lord the king came out from Jerusalem, so the king would take it to heart. For your servant knows that I have sinned. Therefore, behold, I have come today, the first of all the house of Joseph, to go down to meet my lord the king." There is the question of why he says the house of Joseph. I think I talked about that before, so I won't talk about it. But at any rate, he goes down. He confesses his sin. He comes down quickly. He bows before the king, and he gives this confession. And then it says, Abishai, that's our man, Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said, "Should not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord anointed, the Lord's anointed?" Well, Abishai is correct. Shimei should have been put to death. And when I say should have been put to death, I mean he deserved it. He deserved to be put to death the first time. It's a measure of David's mercy and a measure of David's wisdom that he did not put him to death. And David, interestingly, responds by saying in verse 22, "What have I to do with you, O sons of Zeruiah?" He said that the first time as well. "That you should this day be an adversary to me." And I think it's interesting that he calls him an adversary. And I think it's because David realizes the significance of this situation. And truly, it would have been, no matter how you look at it, it would have been the wrong thing for David to put him to death at this time for this simple reason. David has just convinced all of Judah that he would basically forgive them, and he has called them to be united around him, and he's actually asked the chief of the rebels, Amasa, to be his chief, to be his general. Now, in that scenario, if the very first person that comes to you and begs for mercy, you put him to death, you're sending the complete opposite message. And I think David realized that, and David realized that Shimei deserved death, but he shows him mercy. And, you know, whether or not Shimei was sincere, and we talked about this when we covered Shimei the last time, so I don't want to talk too much about it, but we know in 1 Kings chapter 2, when David was on his deathbed, and Solomon comes to him, and he gives him advice about several people, and one of them is Shimei. And basically, he calls him to bring judgment on Shimei, but he does it in such a way as he basically sets up a scenario whereby he shows his unfaithfulness and then he's put to death. I don't think this was like vengeance on David's part, but I think this was realizing that Shimei did deserve death. That's one of those questions I want to ask David. You know, what was he thinking here? You know, I'm not sure, but he does show Shimei mercy, and it is truly wisdom on his part. We then see the case of Mephibosheth. And again, we talked about him as well. And here we have a man who seemingly betrayed him, and David was under the impression or under the understanding, thanks to Ziba, who was his servant, and again, the background to this, as you know, Mephibosheth was the son of Jonathan, whom David had made a covenant with when he was a young man, that he would be kind to him even after he became king and Saul would be deposed. And so David, after he'd been king for a while, he looked up a descendant of Jonathan. It happened to Mephibosheth. He found Mephibosheth, and he showed him mercy. And Mephibosheth was kind of in hiding on the other side of the Jordan, and David called him to actually to himself. He provided for Mephibosheth to eat at the king's table. He called Ziba, who was the servant of Saul's house and was over all of Saul's servants. He called Ziba and said, "Ziba, you go and you take care of all the lands that were Saul's, and you provide for Mephibosheth." And so he restored it all to Mephibosheth. He showed amazing mercy to Mephibosheth, this man who was lame on both feet. He had fallen when he was a child of five and was crippled. And David showed amazing mercy to him. But do you remember when David was being chased out of town? Ziba, the servant of Saul, came to David, but Mephibosheth was not with him. And you remember David asked him, "Where's Mephibosheth?" And Ziba basically slandered him and said that he was waiting to be restored to the king, you know, to his house to be restored since David was being overthrown, which was most assuredly not true. But so remember, David, in response to that, gave all the land that was Mephibosheth and gave it to Ziba. Now that was the backstory to this, right? So now, when David is coming back, Mephibosheth comes out to meet him, apparently knowing that Ziba had slandered him. It says in verse 24, well, I should point out, whatever this means, but verse 17, actually, Ziba was one of those who came to bring the king over. But verse 24, then Mephibosheth... I'll just read this section again. Then Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king. That's really the grandson of Saul. It would be the same word. He was the son of Jonathan. Came down to meet the king, and he had neither cared for his feet, nor trimmed his mustache, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed unto the day he came home in peace. It was when he came from Jerusalem to meet the king that the king said to him, "Why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth?" So he answered, "O my lord the king, my servant deceived me. For your servant said, 'I will saddle a donkey for myself that I may ride on it and go with the king,' because your servant is lame. Moreover, he has slandered your servant to my lord the king, but my lord the king is like the angel of God. Therefore do what is good in your sight. For all my father's household was nothing but dead men before my lord the king. Yet you set your servant among those who ate at your own table. What right do I have yet that I should complain any more to the king?" So the king said to him, "Why do you still speak of your affairs? I have decided, you and Ziba shall divide the land." Mephibosheth said to the king, "Let him take even all of it, since my lord the king has come safely to his own house." Well, there's some debate over like what David is doing here. I mean, this is my personal opinion, and I say personal opinion, I mean, the scriptures don't tell us what David was thinking. I think Mephibosheth was probably innocent. I think that seems clear from this text. But I personally think David was in a situation where it was, again, a he said, she said. If you think about it from either angle, whether it was Ziba or whether it was Mephibosheth who was lying, they would both want to make sure when David came across, right, that things would be, you know, that David had their viewpoint, right? So Mephibosheth was probably telling the truth, but David had no way of knowing. It really was a case of he said, she said. And so he, and I think this is in his wisdom, he divides the land. And he says, you know, you can divide the land with Ziba. And that was his resolution. Some people have compared it to, and I think for good reason, to the wisdom of Solomon, you know, next generation. You remember when he came to the throne, and he was also in a situation where it was a she said, she said, right? It was, you know, remember there were two harlots and they both had children and they were in the same room sleeping with their babies, their sons. And no one else was in the room, right? In the middle of the night, the one suffocated her son when she laid on him. And so she took her son that had died and switched it with the other one while she was sleeping. And so when she woke up, she had a dead son, but it wasn't her son. And she knew that her roommate had switched the sons. And so it was a case of there were no witnesses. It was a case of what one said against the other. And Solomon, in amazing wisdom, you know, held up the child and said, divide it in two and give a half to each. Well, he knew that the mother would cry out, you know, you know, don't divide the child, give it to the other one. And, of course, that's how Solomon determined the case and showed great wisdom. Well, there's a little bit of an analogy here. It's not exactly the same, obviously. But it is a case, and this is, I think, the analogy. It is a case of there was no way that David could know for sure what had happened. There was no way for sure he knew who was lying and who was telling the truth. And so he divided the land. And there is a sense in which, the response of Mephibosheth perhaps vindicates him and his sincerity, because he basically says, listen, I don't care about the land. He says, let him have all of it. You know, it wasn't about the land. But it was, he says, and his response shows a response of one who sincerely loved the king. He says, let him even take it all, since my lord the king has come safely to his own house. So we see, again, David's mercy. We see his wisdom. And in the last case, in the case of Barzillai, we see his kindness, you might say his thankfulness, towards a man who provided for him, a man who provided for him in a time of great need. In verses 31 to 39, we read about Barzillai. And again, we found Barzillai back in chapter 17. Back in chapter 17, after David, it's at the end of the chapter, after David crossed the Jordan, he was fleeing from Absalom. He crossed the Jordan, and he didn't have time to gather supplies. He left in a hurry. He didn't have many. He had a few faithful followers, and he was just trying to survive and get out of town. He got across the river, and he was in great need. He was in need of food and stuff, and there were three men that voluntarily provided everything he needed and for all of his people. And one of them was Barzillai. You know, in our world, again, in such a case, you know, people gouge and, you know, they sell at high prices and, you know, but that's not what these men did. These men provided it for free, and they, out of love for David and a commitment to David, and one of those men was Barzillai. And again, let me read verses 31 to 39. Now, Barzillai, the Gileadite, and you say, what is a Gileadite? Gileadite, technically, in the broadest sense, Gilead is the land that's east of the Jordan. So, you know, if you look at a map, it would be part of Jordan today, right? The country of Jordan. But east of the Jordan, if you go there to Israel, it's right east of the Jordan. It's a highland. It goes up right away. It's almost like a complete drop-off. And this highland. And this was kind of considered the wilderness, kind of. But Gilead, there were three tribes there, as I recall. Part of the tribe of Manasseh was there, not all of it, but part of the tribe of Manasseh, Gad and I think Reuben, were the three tribes that had settled east of the Jordan back in the book of Numbers. And so there seems to be some correlation between a Gileadite and maybe the tribe of Gad. There is some, but whatever, he was an Israelite. He was east of the Jordan. That's where he lived. And he was not of the tribe of Judah. So he was not among the Israelites that rebelled against David. But at any rate, now Barzillai the Gileadite had come down from Rogalim. We don't know where that is, by the way. I don't think they've identified where Rogalim is. And he went on to the Jordan with the king to escort him over the Jordan. Now Barzillai was very old, being 80 years old, and he had sustained the king while he stayed at Mahanaim, for he was a very great man. The king said to Barzillai, "You cross over with me, and I will sustain you in Jerusalem with me." But Barzillai said to the king, "How long have I yet to live, that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am now 80 years old. Can I distinguish between good and bad? Or can your servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Or can I hear any more the voice of singing men and women? Why then should your servant be an added burden to my lord the king? Your servant would merely cross over the Jordan with the king. Why should the king compensate me with this reward? Please let your servant return, that I may die in my own city near the grave of my father and my mother. However, here is your servant Chimham. Let him cross over with my lord the king, and do for him what is good in your sight." The king answered, "Chimham shall cross over with me, and I will do for him what is good in your sight. Whatever you require of him, I will do for you." And all the people crossed over the Jordan. The king crossed too. The king then kissed Barzillai and blessed him, and he returned to his own land. Well, it's a simple narrative, and I just, again, observe a couple things. First of all, I observe this man, Barzillai, what it says about him. It's a short description, really. He is described as very old and very great. He was a very old man. He was 80 years old, and he was a very great man, meaning a man certainly of wealth and influence, and he was a man, apparently, again, of very great kindness, because he provided for David in David's time of great need. We find David offers here this 80-year-old man who's very great, very old. He offers him to cross over with him and go to Jerusalem. And he says, "I will care for you in Jerusalem." And that was a very kind offer to go and live with the king. But of course, you know, Barzillai's, first of all, again, he's very old. He's also very great. He probably doesn't need too much at this point. And so he declines David's offer. And he gives an interesting response, a response that, quite frankly, reminds us of the book of Ecclesiastes. In verse 34, he said, "How long have I yet to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I'm 80 years old. Can I distinguish between good and bad?" I don't think he's talking about moral, you know, ability to judge moral issues when he says good and bad. I think he's talking about the fact that his five senses are probably pretty dull and he can't discern very well in regard to hearing, seeing, and tasting and so forth. And basically saying, you know, I'm, you know, going and enjoying all the food of the king and all these things that the king enjoys. I mean, I'm past the age of being able to really enjoy them too much anyway. I think it's pretty much what he's saying. He says, "Can your servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Or can I hear any more the voice of singing men and women? Why then should your servant be an added burden to my lord the king?" And it is true, as you get older, you can enjoy the good things of life less and less. And I mean, that's just reality. I mean, again, it's the book of Ecclesiastes. You know, your eyes grow dim, your teeth start to fall out, as it says in Ecclesiastes, the grinders cease, as he says. You know, your hearing becomes dull. And, you know, it's kind of like you're closed off in a way from the world more and more. That is one of the, I mean, it is, it's a reminder of the curse of death, you know. And death, old age and death, they remind us, they do, they remind us of the curse. And this is why, you know, Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, you know, seek your Creator, right? While you're young, you know, youth is vain. It's fleeting. You know, you young people, you're beautiful. You have beautiful skin and you're athletic and you run around and do stuff and you think this is going to be like this the rest of your life. It's not true. It's not very long. Believe me, it's amazing. It's not very long. You're going to be among the old. We all are, right? And so here's Barzillai, who's at the end of his life. And You know, this is not a complaint on Barzillai's, but Barzillai, basically his request is just let me go back to my hometown and die in my hometown with my own people and be buried. I like that. It's a good response. And he says, verse 37, please let your servant return that I may die in my own city near the grave of my father and my mother. But he does give this request. However, here is your servant Chimham. Now, Chimham is not identified per se. It is generally assumed that either this is, I mean, most people say his son. I'm actually, to be honest, I may be wrong. I'm inclined to say it's his grandson, but certainly it's a relative. Certainly it's a descendant. I say his grandson only because of age. I mean, if he's 80 years old, his son's probably 60-something. You know, but, you know, I'm thinking maybe he sent his grandson up there. Said, here's Chimham. He doesn't identify him. He just says, here's your servant Chimham. Let him cross over with my lord the king and do for him what is good in your sight. And the king answered Chimham, Chimham shall cross over with me, and I will do for him what is good in your sight, and whatever you require of me, I will do for you. Now, it is true. We do know that when David was dying, he said to Solomon, 1 Kings 2:7, show kindness to the sons of Barzillai. So we're assuming Chimham was a son or a grandson, a descendant. And Solomon was instructed to do kindness to Chimham. We never hear about Chimham again. But there's one verse in Jeremiah 41, and it's kind of incidental, and you read right over it and you wouldn't even think of it. And how many people can tell you who Chimham is? Have you ever heard that in a Bible trivia game? Who's Chimham? Who's Chimham? Who's ever talked about Chimham, right? So you read about this in Jeremiah and you would never even think about it, but it's kind of how the Bible so often, its authenticity and truthfulness are often displayed this way. Like it's an offhand comment that no one would ever even think about, but it kind of confirms in a way. This is the context here. Again, this is after the fall of Jerusalem in 586. This is 500 years later, roughly, you know, give or take. David was around 1000 B.C. Fall of Jerusalem is 586 B.C. And after the fall of Jerusalem, Babylon sets up Gedaliah as governor. Ishmael kills Gedaliah. Jonathan comes in and chases after Ishmael. And they come back and they end up wanting to flee to Egypt because they're afraid the Babylonians are going to come and take revenge because of the death of Gedaliah. That's the context. It has nothing to do with David or Chimham or Barzillai. But as they're going through the land on their way to Egypt, it mentions they stop at this place. It says in Jeremiah 41:17, they went and stayed in Gerut Chimham. Gerut is a word that means inn or lodging place. So it's the lodging place of Chimham, which is beside Bethlehem, in order to proceed into Egypt. Well, again, it has been suggested, we don't know for sure, but it's suggested that, you know, here's a place that possibly David provided land for this son. It says near Bethlehem. Well, where's Bethlehem? Bethlehem is David's city. And so there was this place near Bethlehem called Chimham, 500 years later. And so it seems to confirm the idea that, in fact, David's house did show great kindness to this man, and evidenced in a name of a town or place 500 years later. But at any rate, David did show kindness to this man, thankfulness for all that was given to him in his time of need. Let me just take a couple minutes to say a few words about these last verses in 40 to 43. And maybe I'll say more about them next week as I go through chapter 20. But let me just read verse 40 to 43. And here is a controversy now. Again, if I can just remind you of the context, they're going back to Jerusalem. And on the way back, they've crossed the river Judah and some of these people from Benjamin have helped David across the river, and they're moving towards Jerusalem. And as they're going to Jerusalem, they go through Gilgal. Now, Gilgal is a town that's across the Jordan, but a little ways off the Jordan. So, you know, on your way to Jerusalem, you go by Gilgal. Now, when they're at Gilgal, then the rest of Israel comes and joins the party, if you will. It says, now the king went on to Gilgal, and Chimham went with him, and all the people of Judah and also half the people of Israel accompanied the king. And behold, all the men of Israel came to the king and said to the king, why had our brothers, the men of Judah, stolen you away and brought the king and his household and all David's men with him over the Jordan? So they have a problem with the fact that they weren't involved in the plans. And again, I go back to their loyalty to David seems very shallow all the way through, but they're angry here, and I don't think it's because they love David so much as it's politics, it's influence, power. You know, how can you bring the king back without us? And so they're upset. And verse 42 says, then all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, because the king is a close relative to us. Of course, he is from that tribe. Why then are you angry about this matter? Have we eaten at all at the king's expense? Or has anything been taken for us? In other words, they didn't benefit at all from this. They weren't like, you know, receiving extra benefits from the king or financial help from the king. They weren't being fed by the king. But he's a special relative to them. He's their, you know, from their tribe. Verse 43, but the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, we have 10 parts in the king. Therefore, we also have more claim on David than you. Now, I do find it interesting that he says 10 parts. Because there are how many tribes? 12 tribes, right? There are two half-tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh or Joseph, right? But I'm not a mathematician, but 12 minus 1, Judah, is 11. So the question is, who are the, you know, why 10 and not 11? You know, but this is often the case, right? You have Judah, and the 10 tribes. But where are the other tribes? Well, there's several complications about it, and I don't want to go into all the detail, but it's kind of interesting how the tribes worked out, right? So probably the most obvious answer to that is within Judah was what tribe? Simeon. Simeon's territory was inside Judah's territory. Do you remember when Levi and Simeon killed all those, what was the city? Shechem, thank you. And destroyed them all? It was because of that. God says because of their violence, Jacob said this, right? Because of their violence, the Lord's going to scatter you through the land. And Levi was scattered because of all the cities, the Levitical cities were all through all the tribes. And Simeon's territory was right in the middle of Judah's territory. And so some have pointed out that Simeon is the other tribe, right? Also, the Levites were through all the tribes. And then later, Benjamin joined. So I think in this context, probably it was Simeon. But that was the other tribe, but I'm not sure. I find it interesting that they say 10 tribes. At any rate, it says they have more claim on David than Judah. But again, the shallowness of their love for David appears right away in chapter 20 when Sheba rises up and says, to your tents, O house of Israel, you know, and they reject David. So, you know, they're not too invested in David. Why then do you treat us with contempt? Was it not our advice first to bring back our king? So again, they say it was our idea in the first place to bring the king back. Yet the words of the men of Judah were harsher than the words of the men of Israel. Well, at the end of the day, we know there was a revolt, and that's next week. Sheba's rebellion follows hard on the heels of this. And then David puts that down. And, you know, this is David's, all of this is a result of David's sin and judgment on him because of what his sin was. But in this, we see God's providence working all these things out for his glory. But again, my main point here tonight in regard to David is you see, again, in the midst of all these things, you see David's character. You see his wisdom. You see him. You see his mercy, his wisdom, his thankfulness. And he brings about the unity of the nation in spite of all these dynamics. And we see God's goodness to David and to the nation in spite of all these things. So next week, Lord willing, and again, last week of until the summer break, hopefully we'll get through chapter 20 and we'll look at this final revolt against David by Sheba's rebellion. So let's pray. Father, again, we thank you for your word and thank you for the many